Good evening. Once again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, it's getting cold here. I don't know what it's doing where you're at, but yesterday we had a beautiful, sunshiny, warm day, and this morning it started out the same way, beautiful and warm, and a little bit of dusted snow was on the ground when I woke up, but there was not a cloud in the sky. It was the sun was shining. It was nice temperature. And then the clouds began to drift in, and the temperature fell like a rock from a 10-story building. It's cold. And so I guess we're going to have some bad weather tonight. And if you hear things bumping and banging and groaning in the background, it's the wind. The wind. We get some pretty high winds up here sometimes. And those of you who listen to this broadcast for several years know that. You've heard... You've heard it before, and you've heard things blowing around and hitting the house, and sometimes they're big things. It's not funny. Well, things continue to happen. Bill Clinton just looks worse and worse every day, and so does NATO. And who are all these jerks that keep hollering to send in ground troops? Boy, they sure haven't studied their history. You know, when I was a young man, I was eager to go off and fight a war for my country, and I went off and fought in Vietnam, and those little guys running around in the jungle weren't as easy to beat as everybody told us they were. They were pretty tough. In fact, to this day, I have a tremendous respect for the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Army that opposed me in Vietnam. And I think... if any of these people would stop to look at history, they'd think three or four times before they sent ground troops in to fight the Yugoslavian people. I don't think that's very smart at all. And they're on the verge of completing a pact with Russia for mutual defense. And if that passes, then Russia will be duty-bound to send troops to oppose NATO on the side of Yugoslavia. Yeltsin, who usually doesn't say much militarily and doesn't rattle any swords or anything like that, has threatened to retarget the Russian nuclear warheads against NATO and the United States, and has warned that we're on the verge of World War III and nobody's listening to him. Of course, some obscure minister from the Russian government then denied that they were retargeting the missiles, but it doesn't make any difference. It only takes about 30 minutes to do it anyway. It's no big deal. And so, just the fact that Boris Yeltsin would say something like that is scary. That's really scary, folks. And the whole world appears to be turning against the United States of America, and I don't blame them one bit. You know, I don't like the United States of America much anymore either. Not just because of this, but because of a whole lot of things. I think we're on a one-way street, headed into something that nobody even wants to think about. And I think it has the potential to be very, very, very bad. I want to read to you something. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of Mother Shipton or not. She was an English woman who died in 1449. That's before Columbus discovered America. And they called her Mother Shipton. And she made some prophecies. She wrote some poetry and made some prophecies. And I'm going to read one of them to you now. I'm not telling you that she is some prophet of God. I'm not telling you that she knew what she was doing. She could have written this just by accident. She could have had a dream, or she could have had some kind of psychic vision that allowed her to really see into the future. I don't know the answer. But I will tell you this. When you hear this, it will send chills up your spine. It sent chills up my spine today at noon when Doyle brought this home. And I read it. And so I'm going to read it to you. I want you to listen very carefully. It's really spooky. Mother Shipton's prophecies. Mother Shipton was an English woman who died in 1449. Now listen carefully, folks. A carriage without horses shall go. Disaster filled the world with woe. In London, Primrose Hill shall be its center, hold a bishop's see. Around the world, men's thoughts shall fly, quick as the twinkling of an eye. And waters shall great wonders do. How strange, and yet it shall come true. Then upside down the world shall be, and gold be found at root of tree. Through towering hills proud man shall ride, no horse nor ass move by his side. Beneath the water men shall walk, shall ride, shall sleep and even talk. And in the air men shall be seen, in white, in black, as well as green. A great man then shall come and go, for prophecy declares it so. In water, iron then shall float, as easy as a wooden boat. Gold shall be found in stream and stone, in land that is as yet unknown. Water and fire shall wonders do, and England shall admit the Jew. The states shall lock in fiercest strife, and seek to take each other's life. When North shall thus divide the South, the eagle bills in lion's mouth. Then tax and blood and cruel war shall come to every humble door. And now a word in uncouth rhyme of what shall be in future time. For in these wondrous far-off days, the women shall adopt a craze to dress like men and trousers wear and cut off all their locks of hair. They'll ride astride with brazen brow as witches do on broomsticks now. Then love shall die and marriage cease, and nations wane as babies decrease. The wives shall fondle cats and dogs, and men shall live much same as hogs. In 1926, build houses light of straw and sticks, for then shall mighty wars be planned, and fire and sword swept o'er the land. But those who live the century through in fear and trembling, this will do. Flee to mountains and the dens, to bog and forest, and to wild fens. For storms shall rage and oceans roar when Gabriel stands on sea and shore. And as he blows his wondrous horn, old worlds shall die and new be born. Isn't that spooky? She wrote that sometime in the 1400s. I would imagine she died in 1449. And she was known as Mother Shipton. I've read this before, many, many years ago. I've forgotten all about it. And I think there's a book out about Mother Shipton's prophecies, but I don't know what it is. Haven't seen it. Well, get pen and paper and get ready. Tonight, I'm going to tell you a little story. Wrong one. And it's not the wind, it's just me. Here we go. This is the right one.
Yes.
You know, coffee's doing the show right here.
Welcome.
Did you add food to bring me some water, too? Thank you, baby.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order.
Peace.
A new world order.
Peace.
A new world order.
Peace.
A new world order.
The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value, then charge you interest. You get the debt, they get the interest. They get the gold, you get the debt.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. It is a big idea. A new world order.
Controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. Bring us out. Crush our hope. They created AIDS. It's a designer disease. To bring you down. To grovel on your knees. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to illuminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to pay for it with plastic, surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb,
under their control. They want it all.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. It is a big idea.
Rule the nation.
It is a big idea.
Indoctrination.
Incarceration. It's a new world order.
Let's say it's free.
Illuminati. A new world order.
The people are the top.
A new world order.
That's it. It's the shot.
A new world order.
New world order. They're not going to be
more and more. And more.
And more.
It is a big idea. A new world order. It is a big idea. A new world order.
Think about that. I'm going to read you some tonight from a book called Freedom on the Altar by William Norman Grigg, which is a nice little book that contains an awful lot of information. Most of it I've already given you over the years, but he sort of has a nice way of putting some of it together that I like. And I would encourage you all to find a copy of this book. It's called Freedom on the Altar by William Norman Grigg, and read it. It's published by the American Opinion Publishing Incorporated. That's American Opinion Publishing Incorporated in Appleton, Wisconsin. That's Appleton, Wisconsin. And I think you can also get it. Yeah, you can get it from American Opinion Book Services in Appleton, Wisconsin. And here's a number. Area code 414-749-3783. That's 414-749-3783. You can order this book with a credit card, I believe, if you call that number. Okay? So, we get nothing from it, just in case some of you are wondering. Edward Gibbon once said, "The empire of the Romans filled the world. The world became a safe and dreary prison for Caesar's enemies. To resist was fatal, and it was impossible to fly." "Wherever you are," said Cicero to the exiled Marcellus, "remember that you are equally within the power of the conqueror." End quote. Sridath Ramphal, co-chairman of the Commission on Global Governance, said this, and I quote, "We have ceased to be the world of nation states that we once were. I don't believe that the world is going to retreat into a situation where people are going to run away from this global neighborhood we've become, because there are no sanctuaries left. There's no place to run to." End quote. Now that's pretty scary. For 50 years, ladies and gentlemen, the United Nations and its supporters have insisted that the body represents the last best hope of mankind. One recent expression of this sentiment was offered by the Deseret News, which is Utah's largest circulation daily newspaper, which editorially insisted that, and I quote, "Despite its dismal recent showing, the United Nations remains the world's best hope for cooperation and peaceful coexistence," end quote. During the United Nations' 50th anniversary, the institution's founders and founding events were presented through a haze of nostalgia. The world body's present undertakings were depicted as the selfless labors of heroic idealists seeking to summon a peaceful future. But there are many people, ladies and gentlemen, who have seen that future and who want absolutely no part of it. I'm one of those. Survivors and witnesses of the United Nations' 1961 peacekeeping massacre in Katanga, a province of the former Belgian Congo, regard the Blue Berets as something less than heroic. Less than heroic. Religious scholar Thomas Molnar, who has ample first-hand experience with United Nations peacekeeping activities, testified, "I have often walked in the footsteps of United Nations troops intervening for peace and seen pillage, rape, and injustice. In the ex-Belgian Congo, Indian United Nations soldiers were feared like the plague. 30 years later, Russian United Nations troopers returned to Bosnia after demobilization to continue ravaging land and population. Meanwhile, active Blue Berets stationed in the Balkans deal in drugs." End quote. Nor has the United Nations endeared itself to the productive and responsible business classes of Haiti, who have been strangled by United Nations sanctions and blackmailed by the international community into accepting the return of Marxist psychopath Jean Bertrand Aristide. Although Americans are justifiably proud of the valor and skill of the American troops who fought in the 1991 Gulf War, it must not be forgotten, ladies and gentlemen, that the armed conflict with Saddam Hussein's forces was fought to empower the United Nations, not to protect American interests. Therefore, the Americans who perished in that war are numbered among the United Nations victims. Furthermore, the Iraqi civilians who remember the United Nations-supported terror bombing of Baghdad, and the Iraqi children who have undergone hideous privations because of the United Nations post-war embargo, to say absolutely nothing of the hapless conscripts who served as cannon fodder for Saddam Hussein, are less than impressed with the United Nations humanitarian pretensions. The only real winners in the Gulf War were the curiously indestructible dictator Saddam Hussein, the United Nations, and all the people who make all the bombs and bullets and guns and munitions and landmines and artillery shells. Christian and Muslim pro-life activists who attended the 1994 International Conference on Population and Development in Egypt can testify of the colonialist condescension of United Nations officials. That condescension curdled into bitter anti-Catholic hostility when the church attempted to moderate the anti-family elements of the Cairo program. Chinese women compelled to undergo compulsory abortion and sterilization under Red China's United Nations-supported population control program undoubtedly a look upon the world body as something other than a family-friendly institution. And Tibetans, whose culture is being effaced from the earth by Red Chinese occupation forces, must be aware of the support which the Chinese Communist government is receiving through UNICEF, the United Nations Fund for Population Activities and the United Nations Development Program. Africans also have reason to dispute the United Nations humanitarian pretensions. In 1994, United Nations peacekeeping troops in Mozambique purchased sexual favors from impoverished children. In 1988, the director of the Belgian UNICEF, the Belgian UNICEF Committee, was convicted of participation in a child sex and prostitution ring. The organization's Brussels office was used to manufacture child pornography, much of it involving children of North African descent. Somalians recall that during the United Nations Operation Restore Hope, civilians were massacred indiscriminately by Pakistani peacekeepers. They may also recall the beating death of 16-year-old Shadane Aron at the hands of a Canadian peacekeeping regiment which treated Somalians to scornful, racist abuse. There are numerous other examples of this sort which could be used to illustrate the character of the United Nations. However, such objections shatter harmlessly on the impregnable prejudices of the United Nations' devoted supporters who, borrowing a theme which was often played by apologists for Soviet communism, insist that the world body should be judged by its professed ideals rather than by its actual performance. Defenders of a United Nations-administered New World Order insist that the triumph of their position is a historic inevitability. And many of them dismiss their opponents as deluded at best and psychologically infirm at worst. Those who defend the New World Order skate effortlessly across the surface of glistening cliches. You've heard them. After all, they contend, the nations of the world are inextricably interdependent. A true global culture has emerged that makes all of humanity the inhabitants of a common global village. We must recognize that problems such as pollution, crime, warfare, ethnic conflicts, poverty, and disease know no boundaries, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. Ad nauseum. Others contend that the United Nations is a harmless distraction, a sign cure for the developed world's bureaucrats and a playpen for third world malcontents. And a variation of this argument was used by some members of the triumphant 1994 Republican majority. Representative Sonny Callahan, Republican from Alabama, chairman of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Foreign Operations, insists that we have got to have some kind of international organization that we have a strong voice in. Boy, barely got that pot down before I almost blew the microphone off the table here with a sneeze. Bud Nance, staff director for Senator Jesse Helms, Republican North Carolina, sought to placate press concerns over his employer's conspicuous criticism of the United Nations. One of the real good reasons for the United Nations is to talk to each other. The United Nations keeps the little boys from fighting amongst themselves. It provides stability, he said. It is significant, I think, that the most common defense offered on behalf of the United Nations is that it is inconsequential. However, even if the depiction of the UN is the equivalent of a global coffee clutch were reliable, the body would remain a financial imposition upon American taxpayers and thus constitute a tangible offense. It is also untrue that the body offers a forum in which the peoples of the world can talk to each other. The body is a forum for governing elites, most of which remain almost entirely unaccountable to the peoples they supposedly represent. And remember, none of these representatives are elected by anybody. So much for the great global democracy. It is also indefensible to maintain that a global body is necessary for communications among governments. In this era of the internet, teleconferences, fax machines, email, you name it. Furthermore, is it not reasonable to believe that disagreements among nations are best dealt with through bilateral discussions rather than through public confrontations in an international body? Writing in 1987, the New Republic's Charles Krauthammer, an internationalist who is not opposed to the United Nations in principle, pointed out that the UN has failed in its principal role, which is keeping the peace. In fact, it has degenerated to the point where its actions exacerbate the few conflicts it still influences. And since that time, the United Nations has been empowered to take more assertive actions to enforce peace with the lethal results that I've just described. American involvement in the United Nations has been associated with an unprecedented entanglement in military ventures which have nothing to do with our national security. Absolutely nothing. Significantly, since the ratification of the United Nations Charter in 1945, Congress has not issued a single declaration of war. However, that doesn't mean that peace has prevailed. Just the opposite, as a matter of fact. Quite the contrary. Citing a Congressional Research Service study entitled Instances of Use of United States Armed Forces Abroad, 1798 to 1993, researcher Thomas R. Edlam observes that since the Senate ratified the United Nations Charter in 1945, American military conflicts abroad have consistently increased. There were six such conflicts during the 1950s. Seven during the 1960s, nine in the 1970s, 22 in the 1980s, and in the first 3.5 years of this decade, although it is true that not every such engagement has been a UN initiative, almost all of them have been justified by reference to United Nations guidelines. You call that stability? I certainly don't. And despite this record, the United Nations advocates insist that the organization needs to be further empowered in order to carry out its mission. This reflects an old axiom of politics. You know what that is. When a government initiative fails, blame inadequate funding, not mistaken premises. Several working papers for UN reform in the body's 50-year anniversary have been proposed, and all of them envision an increased imposition upon overburdened American taxpayers and greatly enhanced powers for the organization. Sridath Ramphal has presented a global human security blueprint on behalf of the Commission on Global Governments, co-chaired by Ramphal and socialist Ingvar Carlson of Sweden. The Commission on Global Governance has presented 10 clusters of reform, which include, and listen very carefully, acceptance and evolution of the concept of planetary security, including mandates for custodianship of the global commons, which are the ocean, the atmosphere, and anything else the United Nations sees fit to designate as such, like biospheres. This custodianship would be exercised by the United Nations in cooperation with the international civil society, governing elites, tax-exempt foundations, and United Nations-associated non-governmental organizations known as NGOs. The establishment of an apex global economic body within the United Nations system, but reaching beyond governments in its functioning. Now, what Ramphal has referred to as a UN Economic Security Council, which would be able to raise global revenues for global purposes through international charges and taxes agreed upon and imposed by treaty. Another, and arguably even more audacious outline for United Nations reform, is the Global Security Program put forth by the Gorbachev Foundation. You remember Mikhail Gorbachev, an erstwhile Soviet dictator. He was. I never figured out how this guy became such a good guy all of a sudden. One minute he was a bad guy leading the evil empire. The next minute he was the world's greatest good guy. How did that happen? And they even gave him the oldest in-service army base left in America to play with, the Presidio, where he established the Gorbachev Foundation. All done illegally, I might add. An erstwhile Soviet dictator. He's also an unpunished mass murderer whose policies killed millions of innocent people in the Soviet Union, Latin America, Africa, and Asia. In other words, he's exactly the sort of person whose policy recommendations would find a receptive audience at the United Nations. When he barks, they all jump. Gorbachev's GSP calls for the disarmament of all nations, the strengthening of United Nations law enforcement authority, the involvement of United Nations officials in diversity initiatives and conflict resolution, the development of United Nations directed initiatives in history revision to revise incorrect or tendentious versions of the history of intergroup relations, and the creation of a United Nations General Assembly Commission for the Prevention and Resolution of Conflicts. A 10 to 15 member elitist body, presumably composed of august personages like Gorbachev himself, which of course would keep a worldwide watch on potentially conflictual situations and supervise preventative intervention, just like we're doing right now in Yugoslavia. Now, let me ask you this. Why is a gangster like Mikhail Gorbachev given such moral credibility by the United Nations? Totalitarian thugs who have killed far fewer people and inflicted far less misery than Gorbachev have rightly perished in prison or on the gallows. So just what exactly is the mechanism whereby a proponent of a murderous, discredited ideology can achieve such influence upon the United Nations? That's a pretty good question, isn't it? How many of you think you could answer it? See, many many decent and honorable people who observe the tenacity of collectivist ideas and programs can be heard giving voice to some variant of this frustrated remark. I've said this a lot of times. I've said it right here on the air. Why are intelligent people following policies which have been discredited, which have been proven do not work? Haven't we learned anything from the experience of modern totalitarianism? Well, why do some intelligent people pursue criminal enterprise in spite of the fact that crime is disreputable? The answer, ladies and gentlemen, of course, is that crime pays, either in a material sense or in the form of some psychological reward. Despite the fact that nobody seriously disputes the idea that criminal conspiracies exist, the idea of political conspiracies is just not acceptable. It's considered suspect at best. Yet politics, which is essentially the process of organized compulsion, should be rightfully considered the most fertile ground for conspiracy that has ever existed. In his work, The City of God, Augustine wrote, "Justice being taken away, then, what are kingdoms but great robberies?" And politics has historically been an exercise in collusion and conspiracy in which privileged insiders seek illicit advantage through the power of the state. Noted novelist Taylor Caldwell observed, "There is indeed a plot against the people, and probably always will be, for government has always been hostile to the governed. It is not a new story. And the conspirators and conspiracies have varied from era to era, but it was not until the era of the League of Just Men and Karl Marx that conspirators and conspiracies became one with one aim, one objective, and one determination." End quote. And that determination was, and remains, the desire to create a global socialist order. Now listen to me very carefully. That determination was and remains the desire to create a global socialist order.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took it from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms. Wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold. You get the shell.
A new world order.
CFR controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. String us up. Crush our hope. They created AIDS. It's their designer disease. To bring you down. To grovel on your knees.
Ladies and gentlemen, socialism did not emerge fully formed from the brow of Karl Marx with the publication of the Communist Manifesto in 1848. That's right, 1848. Nor was it a natural product of misguided idealism. The so-called League of Just Men, which retained Marx's dubious literary services, was a remnant of earlier groups which had pursued the objectives contained in the Communist Manifesto, namely the destruction of biblical religion, the patriarchal family, private property, and the independence of nations. In short, the creation of a socialist world government. Now, if you've listened to this broadcast, I outlined exactly who they were. In fact, told you, without any reservations or hesitations, who they are, when they started, what their secret religion is, and how they communicate with a symbolic language, and how for hundreds, even thousands of years, they've been working toward the completion of their great work, the creation of a socialist world government, which they call a utopia, or the new Atlantis, or the Golden Dawn. The concept of a world government which would pacify all disputes and supervise the perfection of mankind is literally centuries old. Remember, all of the lodges of the Illuminati were called lodges of perfection. They exist today. And those who belonged were called perfectibalists. Arguably, the first modern thinker to reveal this project was an apostate French priest named Charles Erigny Castel, also known as Abbé de Saint-Pierre. And I'll refer to him as Saint-Pierre. In 1712, Saint-Pierre published a plan for perpetual peace, which could be considered the first recognizable draft for what is now called the New World Order. Under Saint-Pierre's design, the ruling elites of Europe were to forswear warfare, submitting instead to the jurisdiction of a European Union. Ooh, where did you hear that before? According to historians Will and Ariel Durant, which would be armed with force to compel the acceptance of its decisions. Exactly what NATO is doing now. Nor was Saint-Pierre content merely to sketch out the architecture of a continental government. He also sought to extend the reach of the state into the lives of its subjects in order to remedy their defects. In 1737, Saint-Pierre composed a tract entitled Observations on the Continuous Progress of Universal Reason, in which, as the Durants summarize, he outlined the indefinite perfectibility of mankind through the agency of reason in scientists and governments. This was followed, in short order, by another pamphlet entitled A Project to Perfect the Governments of States, in which Saint-Pierre suggested the creation of a special class of Platonic guardians, what the Durants called a political academy, taken from among the ranks of the most capable governing elites to act as an advisory body in matters of social or moral reform. The Council on Foreign Relations is one of those. Among the specific reform proposals offered by Saint-Pierre, according to the Durants, were universal education under governmental, not ecclesiastical control, religious toleration, which Saint-Pierre defined as a secondary role for the church in public life, the promotion of public welfare by the state, and the enlargement of national revenues by progressive taxes on incomes and inheritances. Does any of this sound familiar to you? The Durants observed with some satisfaction, most of the basic ideas of the philosophies in 18th century secular intellectuals appeared as a prelude in St. Pierre, even to the hope for an enlightened king as an agent of reform. Of course, any political template in which political and intellectual elites are granted unlimited power to reshape the lives of the lesser breeds will find an eager audience among those elites. Jean-Jacques Rousseau was among those who eagerly devoured St. Pierre's writings. Rousseau, who was arguably the most influential statist philosopher of the 18th century and the apostle of political revolution, believed in the terrestrial perfectibility of mankind. In a letter written on January 12, 1762, to Malesherbes, Rousseau recorded an epiphany he had experienced while walking from Paris to Vincennes to visit Diderot. Here's what he said. All at once, I felt myself dazzled by a thousand sparkling lights. Does that sound familiar? Let me read it again. All at once, I found myself dazzled by a thousand sparkling lights. Crowds of vivid ideas thronged into my mind with a force and confusion that threw me into unspeakable agitation. I felt my head whirling in a giddiness like that of intoxication. Ah, if ever I could have written a quarter of what I saw and felt under that tree, with what clarity I should have brought out all the contradictions of our social system. With what simplicity I should have demonstrated that man is by nature good and that only our institutions have made him bad. Now, this experience could be called the road to Damascus in reverse. Rather than being convinced of his sinful nature and need for divine redemption, Rousseau came to believe that he was by nature good and entitled to rearrange mankind's sinful institutions. Of course, this belief is utterly incompatible with the biblical view of mankind as a fallen race in need of God's grace and intervention. Unlike those who hold to the Christian tenet that man must be redeemed by God, disciples of the Enlightenment maintain that man must be rehabilitated or empowered by the state. As world history since July 14, 1789, has compellingly illustrated, the struggle to bring about the terrestrial perfection of man always, in every instance, results in murderous assaults upon traditional institutions. As already noted, Rousseau was among the most enthusiastic supporters of St. Pierre's plan for perpetual peace. In his critique of the plan, Rousseau declared that once there is a society, it is necessary to have a coercive force to organize and coordinate the movements of its members so that the common interests and reciprocal ties are given the solidity they would not be able to have by themselves. This is a recognizable formula for totalitarianism. Furthermore, Rousseau believed that it would be necessary, in Shakespeare's words, to reap the harvest of perpetual peace by the bloody trial of sharp war. Now, what kind of babbling bullshit is that? To have peace, you must have continuous bloody war. Remember, I taught you about that, ladies and gentlemen. And a couple of people wrote about that concept in two different books, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley and 1984. And if you haven't read them yet, you should. According to Rousseau, perpetual peace can only happen by means that humanity might find violent and fearful. We will not see federative leagues of the sort envisioned by St. Pierre except by revolution. A revolutionary battering ram was needed, and one materialized, the subversive network of the Illuminati. Now, the story of Illuminism is a familiar one to this audience because I have started at the very history at the beginning of the dawn of man and taken you all through the centuries of their manipulations of the human race right up to the present time. It's a familiar story. But some people regard it as historical gossip, others as hysterical gibberish. Among the former group, we can find Librarian of Congress James H. Billington, who has written, "The story of the 18th and 19th century secret societies can never be fully reconstructed, but it has been badly neglected, even avoided, one suspects, because the evidence that is available repeatedly leads us into territory equally uncongenial to modern historians in the East and in the West. Nobody wants to know." Billington has documented that it is from romantic occultism in general, and Bavarian Illuminism in particular, that the modern revolutionary tradition, as it came to be internationalized under Napoleon and the Restoration, descends. See, he reached the same conclusion that I did in all of my years of research. He's a librarian at the Library of Congress. He has access to books I will never see in my entire life. To understand the United Nations objectives and aspirations, ladies and gentlemen, it is necessary to review its pedigree in the modern revolutionary tradition. Beginning with the United Nations occultist ancestor, the Bavarian Illuminati. The Durants offer a concise description of the origins of the Illuminati. In 1776, Adam Weishaupt, professor of canon law at Ingolstadt, organized a secret society, which he called Perfectibilisten, but which later took on the old name of Illuminati. Its ex-Jesuit founder, following the model of the Society of Jesus, divided its associates into grades of initiation and pledged them to obey their leaders in a campaign to unite all men capable of independent thought, make man a masterpiece of reason, and thus attain the highest perfection in the art of government. Now, it's wrong, ladies and gentlemen, to believe that Adam Weishaupt was responsible for the formation of the Illuminati in 1776. He was responsible for the formation of the Bavarian Illuminati, and it's notable that he was a Jesuit priest, a professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University, because the Jesuit order was founded, ladies and gentlemen, by Ignatius Loyola, long before Adam Weishaupt ever came along. Long before he was born, long before he was dreamed of. You see, during the Inquisition, there was a branch of the Illuminati in Spain known as the Alumbrados. Ignatius Loyola was the head of the Alumbrados, which means, in Spanish, the Illumined Ones or the Illuminati. He was indicted and arrested by the Inquisition. He was questioned, grilled, if you will, and threatened with torture and even death. He used his considerable influence as a member of the Illuminati to gain an audience with the Pope. He crawled in on his hands and knees. He walked out the first Inspector General, the Black Pope, the man who organized and created the Jesuit order as just another branch of the Illuminati. I don't know what he told the Pope. He must have promised him something. Because instead of having him tortured and burned at the stake for heresy, he became either the right or the left hand of the Pope. I'm not sure which it was. But even today, you will find Jesuit priests in South America teaching liberation theology, which is nothing more than Marxist socialism with a crucifix. Whatever the hell that means. But it's dangerous. Extremely dangerous. As all of these secret organizations and secret powers are, and always will be, dangerous. Very, very dangerous. The Illuminati's platform, ladies and gentlemen, called for, among other things, the abolition of private property, the abolition of patriotism, abolition of the family, and abolition of all existing religions. One commentator sympathetic to the Illuminati explains that the teachings of the Illuminati hold that all is material, that all religions are human invention, that God is man, and man is God, and the world is his, that is, man's kingdom. Thus, man's perfection would be supervised by other men, the illuminated ones who are supposedly destined to preside over human evolution. Now, at the time of the founding of the Bavarian Illuminati by Adam Weishaupt, its doctrines had been well established and expounded by anti-Christian intellectuals such as Rousseau, Diderot, Voltaire, D'Alembert, and others who are known collectively in history as Illumines, philosophes, and encyclopedists. Now, although they were given to quarrels among themselves, in particular Rousseau and Voltaire, they enjoyed a quite interesting and memorable feud, which is interesting reading in itself. This group of elitists shared a common goal, the destruction of Christian society and the creation of a new society under the direction of enlightened, that is, illuminated despots. In Outlook, Weishaupt's society was the distillate of the anti-Christian worldview championed by the philosophies. Charles William Heckethorn, a 19th century historian of esoteric and occultic groups, pointed out that Weishaupt used the hierarchical structure of his society to winnow out potential rebels. If a candidate was found unreliable, records Heckethorn, he was not allowed to go beyond the preliminary degrees of Illuminism. However, if he proved an apt scholar, he was gradually initiated into the latter degrees, where all that he had been taught before was overthrown, and radical and deistic theories and plans were unfolded. And thus, it was at its highest degrees that the revolutionary character of Illuminism was revealed, and initiates were placed under covenant to carry out the wishes of the order, as the society referred to itself and still does. Reports Heckethorn, according to statements found in the writings of Weishaupt, the Magus degree was to be founded on the principles of philosopher Benedict de Spinoza, showing all to be material, God and the world one, and all religions human inventions. Furthermore, at the Rex degree, existing social structures would have to be abolished, and the world would have to be remade. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many.
as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold. You get the shell.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. Spring is out. Crush our hope. They created AIDS. It's their designer disease. To bring you down. To grovel on your knees. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to illuminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to paper it with plastic, surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb, under their control.
Peckett Thorne, who was sympathetic toward the Illuminati, excuse me, recounts that before the exposure of the cabal, the order made considerable progress, including among its members priests, prelates, ministers, physicians, princes, and sovereign dukes, although relatively few of them were initiated into the higher degrees. Or at least that's what he says. Members of secret society. There are 2 significant points to be recognized. First, the effort to subvert Christian society was directed from above by the elite. It was not a spontaneous uprising from the struggling proletarian so-called masses below. Second, Weishaupt's conspiracy included many who were genuinely unaware of the movement's ultimate objectives. People who had joined for social reasons, or perhaps out of a misplaced idealism. Although the Bavarian Illuminati organized by Weishaupt was outlawed in 1784, it survived in the form of reading societies and other front groups. Billington writes that the Illuminist diaspora brought about a posthumous impact that was far greater throughout Europe than anything the order had been able to accomplish during its brief life as a movement of German intellectuals. Don't bet on it. Specifically, what Billington describes as Weishaupt's Rousseauian vision of leading humanity to a new moral perfection, freed from all established religions and political authority, found plentiful converts among the French philosophies. The various strands of anti-Christian thought coalesced around Weishaupt's organization, and it was largely through the Illuminist network that the French Revolution was brought about, a violent and fearful revolution intended to summon a new order in which man would be perfected through the state. The Illuminist network infiltrated France in the early 1780s, including among its first inductees such dubious historical notables as Count Mirabeau and Talleyrand. Count Mirabeau was a significant connecting link through which the Illuminist designs were imported into France from Germany. Mirabeau, whose most notable accomplishments came in the fields of agitation and propaganda, invented the revolutionary vocabulary which still haunts political discourse. Terms and phrases such as revolutionary, counter-revolutionary, revolution of the mind, masses. Furthermore, his propaganda took on an unambiguously religious cast. He referred to the French National Assembly as the inviolable priesthood of national policy and baptized the revolutionary ideology as a political gospel and a new religion for which the people are ready to die. The rites of this new religion were macabre. According to an account provided by Heckethorn, who was, it must be remembered, sympathetic to the Illuminati, the initiation rituals of the French branch of the order were a satanic burlesque in which a naked, tormented, and sexually degraded neophyte was compelled to repeat an oath which included this asseveration. I should say this asseveration. Let me read that again so that there's no mistake. The rites of this new religion were macabre. According to an account provided by Heckethorn, who was, it must be remembered, sympathetic to the Illuminati, the initiation rituals of the French branch of the order were a satanic burlesque in which a naked, tormented, and sexually degraded neophyte was compelled to repeat an oath, which included this asseveration. Listen carefully. I swear to sever all bonds uniting me with father, mother, brother, sisters, wife, relations, friends, mistress, king, superiors, benefactors, or any other man to whom I have promised faith, obedience, gratitude, or service. Once committed to the order, the inductee was told that he may be called upon to rid the earth by death or stupefaction of those who revile truth, as defined by the Illuminists, or seek to wrest it from our hands. Those who joined the order were permitted the indulgence of every carnal impulse. Does that remind you of somebody? Those who joined the order were permitted the indulgence of every carnal impulse. One contemporary account testifies that the meetings of the French Illuminist Lodge were scenes of the grossest debauchery. Gee, do you think William Clinton is a member? I'll bet he is. How much you want to bet? This combination of political conspiracy and moral debauchery throve at the Palais Royal between the years 1788 and 1792 under the supervision of Philip, the Duke of Orleans, and Illuminist, who was the king's cousin. According to Billington, the Palais provided a living link with the underworld of Paris and with the new social forces that had to be mobilized for any revolutionary victory. And those new social forces were represented by depraved political theater, prostitution, pornography, including de Sade's works, and narcotic and sexual dissipations of every conceivable variety. Now, by elevating the basest impulses of the human character, the Illumines brought about the pure democracy of abject bestiality And Billington writes that the Temple of Voluptuousness, as the Palais Royal became known, was able to mobilize mass emotions by offering the intoxicating ambiance of an earthly utopia. Distinctions of rank were obliterated, and men were free to exercise sexual as well as political freedom. Amid the corruption of pre-revolutionary France, at least one author offered advance warning of the coming cataclysm. 11 years before the revolution began with the storming of the Bastille, Louis-Sébastien Mercier, a chronicler of the Palais Royal Social Revolution, predicted that a Republican revolution would begin with that very event. The revolution was not the product of abstract impersonal forces. It was an event which was carefully planned as the inauguration of a new religion and a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. And that the French Revolution was the product of a malignant design was recognized by Lord Acton in his Lectures on the French Revolution, where he said this, and I quote, "The appalling thing in the French Revolution is not the tumult, but the design. Through all the fire and smoke, we perceive the evidence of calculating organization. The managers remain studiously concealed and masked, but there is no doubt about their presence from the first." As de Tocqueville and others would later observe, the French Revolution was perhaps the first political revolution without borders, a global crusade on behalf of a messianic political idea. Many Americans of the era, including some of the most notable figures of the founding generation, were aware of Illuminism and the threat it posed to freedom. George Washington was aware of the organization and warned about, quote, "the nefarious and dangerous plan and doctrines of the Illuminati," end quote. Early Federalist leader Fisher Ames, a member of the First Congress, condemned the Illuminist ideology as visions of bedlam, which have visited some famous heads, and explained that Illuminists manifest a strange heat in the heart, but no light in the brain, seeking to kindle everything in the state that is combustible into a blaze. Furthermore, Ames understood that Illuminism was not an affliction confined to France, but was intended to foster upheaval throughout the European continent and beyond. He wrote that the slender hope afforded by a gauzy, vaporous vision of world brotherhood is all that the Illuminists have proposed as the indemnity for all the crimes and misery of France and all the horrors of the new revolutions that they wish to engender in Europe from the Bosphorus to the Baltic. And in England, they fomented the Paupers' Revolt. Ames warned Americans of an Illuminist-oriented pro-French faction in America. That faction was involved in the creation of, listen to this, folks, democratic societies, which sought to propagate Illuminist ideas among struggling American citizens. Wherever you see that word, democratic, watch out. It's just a code word for rampant socialism. Other prominent Americans who warned of the Illuminists' designs on the infant American Republic included the Reverend Seth Payson and the Reverend Judadiah Morse, a noted geographer, textbook author, and father of inventor Samuel Morse. But America's constitutional foundations held firm because they were set in the bedrock of sound principles. Perhaps the most incisive critique of the Rousseauist Illuminist design for perpetual peace was that written by James Madison and published in the National Gazette on February 2, 1792. Madison summarized Rousseau's plan as a scheme to create a confederation of sovereigns under a council of deputies for the double purpose of arbitrating external controversies among nations and of guaranteeing their respective governments against internal revolutions. He pointed out that the plan would perpetuate arbitrary power wherever it existed. In addition, it would extinguish the hope of one day seeing an end of oppression and cut off the only source of consolation remaining to the oppressed. For those who sought an end to the scourge of war, Madison prescribed the American constitutional formula: compel the government to protect the rights and interests of the people. Were all nations to follow the example set forth in the United States Constitution, Madison proclaimed, the reward would be doubled to each. It is the embrace of true Republican principles, according to Madison, that is the only hope of universal and perpetual peace.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold. You get the shell.
They want is
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. It is a big idea. A new world order.
Controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos. String us up. Crush our hope. They created AIDS. It's their designer disease. To bring you down. To grovel on your knees. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to illuminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to paper it with plastic, surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb,
under their control. They want is
a new world order. A new world order.
idea.
Indoctrination.
Incarceration.
Exactly.
New world order.
Let's say you're free.
Liberty.
A new world order.
The people on the job.
A new world order.
NAFTA is the shot.
A new world order.
New world order.
They're not considered a whole.
And more.
A new world order. It is a big idea.
Yeah, well, just how big is it?
A new world order.
That big. Okay, I see. Phones are open, 520-333-4578. Hope that has opened your eyes a little. Those of you who have been listening to this broadcast for years, you've known all of that all this time. Those of you who have the Mystery Babylon tapes, you've got the whole story in your hands. 520-333-4578 is the number. Open topic tonight. You can talk about whatever you want. I don't care what it is. Just be polite and intelligent. That's all I ask. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good.
Great. Open topic tonight.
Yep.
I just wanted to let you know, have you ever seen the movie The Truman Show?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was extremely interesting. The entire concept was incredible. I don't know how he lived so long without catching on to what was going on long before that. But it was entertaining, and it was interesting, and it demonstrated very well the willingness of people not only be manipulated, but to manipulate.
I think what I saw in that movie, and I don't know if it's just my imagination, but there was too many parts in that movie that really led along to the fact that, say, Jim Carrey was the star. He portrayed perhaps the person that is finding out through the symbolism and all about things like the Illuminati. And if you really watch that movie closely, there's actually symbols in there with the pyramid with the eye.
Oh, yeah.
On some of those buildings. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they were trying to put across in that movie, but I don't think many people got that.
Well, it's too bad. It's like that movie, They Live. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
You should see it. Go down and rent it. It's called They Live. And just watch that movie. I can't understand how so many people can watch that movie and not begin to look around them and see some things that they never saw before.
Well, it's a fact that I went through some of your Mystery Babylon studies on the webpage. I don't know if it's, I think it's Tommy Knocker's webpage.
Tony Knocker, yeah.
Tony Knocker, okay. Yeah, I went through some of that, and I'll tell you, I've been trying to get what you've been saying for years now, but that really, really opened up my eyes. It's like waking up out of a sleep.
Yeah.
And especially the parts of sun worship and the corona, and that's just fascinating to me that religion has been around for that long.
But you also have to understand, I think I made it clear in the tapes, that the actual sun worship are for the profane, the adepts really don't worship the sun, but see the sun as the symbol of intellectual power.
I see.
Remember, the fire is symbol of intelligence or the mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's
why
they're called the philosophers of fire. The proponents of the intellect or reason. Read Rousseau, you'll catch on to that stuff real quick.
I understand there's also supposed to be 3001 coming out to go along with the 2001-2010.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it.
I had heard that.
It'd be pretty hard with Kubrick dead, though.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, I saw a special on PBS about Arthur C. Clarke, and they were working on that movie. There's supposed to be another sequel to the first two.
No, I haven't heard that.
And wouldn't you know it, just as you had Clark pegged for a Mason,
uh-huh.
In this interview, you could actually see he was driving in his car doing an interview, and he had the Masonic emblem hanging off his rear view mirror.
Yeah, see? I can recognize them by their language, by their symbols, by the way they, by what they write and what they say, and the way they stand and look and things. I can do that. And I've never been wrong yet.
No, you haven't, as a matter of fact. And you pretty much opened up my eyes. I'm trying to get through to some of my my friends and people, but...
Yeah, Bobo Gritz is a Freemason.
I wouldn't doubt that for a minute.
He claims he's not. He offers a $10,000 reward in gold to anybody that can prove that he is, but he doesn't have $10,000 in gold.
I wouldn't doubt that.
I don't think he has three pairs of underwear, to tell you the truth.
What's the story with his deal he's got going, Almost Heaven? Is that legitimate, or is that...
Go up there and talk to those people who live there. They'll tell you real quick.
Oh, yeah. I hear they're not there for long.
No, they're not. They can't get clear titles to their property. Nothing. It's just it's a mess. Total mess. Very unhappy people.
I was also checking you were saying how the NATO symbol is actually a swastika.
Stylized. Yes, you have to look at it very carefully.
I found that within those.
It's very easy. If you look at it very carefully, you'll see the swastika. It's right there.
That's absolutely amazing.
Now, in all the encyclopedias of Freemasonry. All of them, every single one of them, even the dictionaries of Freemasonry that are written for Freemasons, by Freemasons, there's only one cross in those books. Guess what it is?
Yeah, oh yeah, the swastika.
It's the swastika.
One other thing before I go. What's with Y2K, in your opinion? I haven't been able to catch
nothing on that. Nothing's with Y2K, except the hysteria. There is a danger... from the possible hysteria and panic that all these people who are whipping up this hysterics and panic over nothing could cause some tremendous problems, even declarations of martial law that could cause a run on the banks and the collapse of the whole economic system. But Y2K itself? Nah.
Is it a hoax for them?
It's not a hoax. Y2K is a technical problem that's being solved. Most of it has been solved. And even for the ones that don't get solved to the last minute and do cause some minor disruptions or maybe even a few major breakdowns, it won't last for more than a few days and the world's not coming to an end.
Yeah, when you stop and think about it, the computers don't now do like the... I know the Chinese are in a different year than what we are. Do you have any clue as to what their computers?
I don't care. It's none of my business. It's their country. I don't care.
Good comeback. Okay, Bill. good to hear you on the air. I lost touch with you there for a couple of years. But
okay. Well, good to have you back.
On the 7 point something.
The mail tells me that our old audience is back, and I love it.
How's your TV station going?
It's getting there.
That'll definitely be a kick for some people.
Yep, it certainly will.
Okay, I'll open up the lines.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye bye.
520-333-4578. Yeah, I don't care what's going on with computers in China. That's their business, not my business. And from what I know about the Chinese people, they've probably got it all taken care of already. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill. This is Steve Jacobs. Is it Jacobson that has that music you've been playing? Is that available? In like the singles form that I could send down to my local radio station and see if I can get them to play that?
Steve Jacobson, what are you talking about? What music?
That music you're playing, the New World Order and all like that?
No, that was done by my good friend Evan Sweetwater and Anthony J. Hilder. It was
Anthony J. Hilder, that was the name I was thinking of. Is just the music version of that available as just a single?
Anthony J. Hilder isn't even close to Steve Jacobson.
I know, I'm sorry, Bill. I just got to call and ask and inquire. Apologize for any.
As far as I know, it's not available. I don't, you know, as far as I know. They originally did it for this broadcast and sent me a copy, and then they made a few others, which they gave to some other people. And I think they even sold a few copies, but that's as far as I know. That's all I know about it.
Well, the reason I asked is they've got a real popular new song that's come out that, you know, it's kind of like the old, you know, talking thing that goes along. I don't even know the name of it. Something about sunglasses or whatever. But I thought that this would be a much better thing to put out over our local airwaves than that piece of trash. I'm just wondering, I'm Steve from L.A. Did I see a little package for me?
Steve.
Yeah, I said it's at 1970.
Steve, listen to me.
Yes.
I get hundreds of letters every day. What in the world would make you think that you're stood out so that I would remember if I got it, unless you painted a big, goblin or something on it?
Well, it was a 4x8 sheet of plywood. I took a picture of it, sent to you.
4x8 sheet of plywood?
Yeah, it says the New World Order Illuminati production.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Okay. There was something that, the other thing I said to you, if you read the byline on those pictures, you'll see it says a lot of politically incorrect. That's what the young people are all about now, is they're not folding into this line of toting the line or whatever. I talked to a lot of real younger 18, 21-year-old people. I'm 43. And they seem to be waking up pretty much right and left, especially when I just break out a few facts to them. So.
Well, they better, because the future belongs to them. What are they going to do when we're all gone and we're not here to fight the battles for?
They're going to be a shit out of duck, I think. Okay, thanks, Bill. Bye.
You're welcome. 520-333-4578 is the secret number. Don't tell anybody. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Cooper.
Hello.
I was wondering if the Soviets, during this fiasco over there in the Balkans, if they would not do something like repudiate the debt to the Western bankers to cause a collapse of the Western economies.
That wouldn't do it. The only thing that would do it would be a run on the banks, where everybody would discover that the cash does not exist, and the whole system would come tumbling down. Because if they repudiate the debt, all they got to do is create more money with a bookkeeping entry. That doesn't hurt them. This is a debt-based system.
Right.
It's no big deal. The money didn't exist before it was loaned, so it's not going to hurt anybody if it's not paid back. The only thing that can hurt this kind of a system, which is backed by nothing, is a run on the banks. That's why this Y2K thing is dangerous. If people panic and make a run on the banks and discover that the money does not exist, that it's not real, that it's all imaginary, that they've been hoodwinked for all these years, then the whole system will come tumbling down, literally overnight. Gold is always worth something, all the time. And I'm not going to tell you what you need to invest in. You have to use your own brain to figure that out.
Well, as in the past, when I had invested in gold and when I needed it for emergencies and had sold it, it was sold. The only people that could buy it were the numismatic dealers in the area. And, of course, you know, you have to submit all this information to them. And then here come along about a year or so later, and the IRS is knocking on my door.
Well,
and charged me capital gains tax.
You did it all wrong.
Yeah.
You didn't know what you were doing. You didn't have to do it that way.
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways to do it.
Well, that was the only way at the time I knew.
No, it wasn't. It's the only way that you knew to do it.
Right.
But it's not the only way to do it. Now, I've told you guys a million times, don't invest in something that you know nothing about. And if you're going to invest in it, learn about it, including the law concerning it and how you can exchange it and how you can exchange it without leaving a trail and all that kind of stuff. But that's up to you to do. If you don't do it, then you got no bitch, no complaint, no gripe.
Right.
None at all.
That's very good information. Very good insight.
I've only been saying it for years.
Well, I just didn't get to hear it when you said it.
Okay. Well, you know it now.
Yeah.
It's called playing somebody else's game. You're at a handicap before you even start.
Well, where do you think all of this garbage in the Balkans is going to go?
Well, it could go to World War III. I'm not saying that it will, but it could. It could very well do that.
I'm just wondering how much control Washington and New York have over the...
None.
Over the Soviets.
But they don't have any control over the Soviets. Whatever the Soviets want to do, they'll do. Right now, they're holding money over their heads.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something. And it's not the Soviets anyway. Actually, it is. They're still linked together in that network.
The old apparatchik is still in power.
Yeah, but they know that the whole collapse of the Soviet Union was not caused by an economic collapse or anything like that. Because they dictated the value of the ruble. And if the ruble fell, it's because they wanted it to fall.
Yes.
You see what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
All they got to do is close the curtain again and say the ruble is worth so much and their economy is viable once again.
Yeah, that would never change. I think that's an illusion that's been painted to the American public or the world public in general.
Yeah, but it's false, you see.
And is it true that the Soviet Union or the former Soviet Union is still building weapons today at an accelerated rate more than they were actually before the Cold War?
I don't know if they're doing that, but I do know that they're not destroying weapons like our government tells us that they're supposed to be doing.
One of my cousins who was involved in the missile technology a while back had told me that the majority of the missiles that we were building probably would not ever hit their targets for a variety of reasons.
I don't know anything about that,
yeah.
And probably he didn't either. It's hearsay.
Right. And I had always thought that most of the weapons that were in the hands of the Soviets, or even that matter for ourselves, were theater tactical type weapons that could be slingshot across, you know, borders or areas, you know, with a high degree of accuracy, as opposed to intercontinental ballistic missiles, which, you know, are plagued with a lot of...
Well, I think the Strategic Air Command put that to rest.
They did?
Yeah. The Strategic Air Command was prepared and could have just totally, absolutely destroyed every single major population center, every industrial plant, and every military facility in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union could also have done exactly the same to us.
With their air command?
Yes.
Are we speaking of conventional or nuclear?
We're speaking of nuclear.
Okay.
You couldn't do such a thing with conventional weapons.
Yeah.
Impossible. They can't even make Slobodan Milosevic and the Yugoslavians, give up over there with their conventional weapons.
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, on PBS today, they were interviewing some different people, and one of the people they talked to was a Serbian, and he was exclaiming, and I was surprised that this was even on the TV. He said, you know, when the Croatians attacked us and killed 5,000 of our people and routed the countryside, nobody said anything about it. No, but nothing was done about it.
Yeah, that's right.
And
now Washington, in fact, President Clinton just wrote an executive order. He wants to deliver a tremendous amount of arms and ammunition to the Croatians.
Mm-hmm. Think that maybe is to maintain the flow of heroin into Europe?
I don't know. But anyway, I got to let you go.
Thank you, Mr. Bill.
Thanks for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. Yep, brand new executive order just came out. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bill. I wanted to talk with you about free speech today.
Yeah?
I saw an article. I had a bunch of newspapers laying around I was trying to read, and I was reading through one from April 3rd of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this was on the Associated Press or just what, but nonetheless, it was under a section called People. And I found here there was a person, a 21-year-old gal named Morgan, last name Morgan, who had worn a Marilyn Manson T-shirt to a fair, you know, the fairgrounds, right?
Marilyn Manson?
Yeah, have you ever heard of Marilyn Manson?
No.
It's a rock group.
Oh, okay.
And they have primarily, you know, lyrics that are just anti-Christian and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, the issue here is that this person was fined $250 and convicted of harassment for wearing a T-shirt.
Hmm.
And the person has been on appeal and everything, and Ms. Morgan said that her shirt was about free speech. And I believe it, don't you?
I don't know. I can't get in her mind. I don't know why she read it. She might have. I don't know why she wore it. She might have wore it to insult people. I don't know. But people shouldn't. Hey!
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Don't interrupt me on my own broadcast.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
The people should not be being arrested and tried for wearing T-shirts.
I don't think so either. But I didn't know if anybody else had seen that story. But this is certainly setting a precedent for First Amendment.
Hey, let me tell you something. In case all of you people haven't figured it out yet, the Constitution is not in force, has not been in force for a long time. They pretend like it is once in a while, just so all the sheeple don't get bent out of shape. But it is not enforced. Federal judges ignore it. Clinton ignores it. Congress ignores it. The military is ignoring it right now. And most Americans don't even know what it says anyway, so they don't even know it's being ignored. When you live under a tyranny, there is no such thing as freedom of speech.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your time, Bill. Hope you have a great evening.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. Could you tell me a safe place to live in this country? You got to move your house somewhere. I'm in New York.
Well, I tell you that New York is definitely not a safe place. I don't think any place on the East Coast above North Carolina is safe. Florida definitely is not safe. But you have to figure those things out for yourself. I can't tell you where to live.
No, it's not tell. It's just like you figure out things, you take in information, you ask.
Yeah.
A wise man seeks counsel.
Yeah, well, I'd get away from all the major population centers if I were you.
What city are you in?
Pardon? What city do I dwell in?
Yeah.
Why do you want to know that?
Oh, just okay, state then.
I don't want people moving here to camp out around my house.
Oh, I was walking around your house in a whole state, but okay, about this fight over here. Now, I was in the military and was involved in a useless war there, Vietnam stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the military people just go to get ranked. You must realize that. You know, the military likes to test weapons. That's what they're doing over there, I think.
They test weapons, and some senior positions can only be filled by officers with combat experience.
And whenever I was in, we always wanted to, everybody wanted to go to fight because you get promotions and more pay, and it really had nothing to do with people wanting to. I don't think you're going to find too many American volunteers that are going to want to volunteer to go and die for. I couldn't even pick it out on a map, Kosovo. I tried to find it the other day, you know. It's hard to pick them, all those different countries and name them, you know?
Well, you know, the military claims that they're the last ones who ever want to go to war. That's not true. They spend every minute of their entire existence living in a socialist system, training to go to war. They can't wait to go to war. They can't move up in rank into certain positions unless they've had combat experience. It's their whole life. And then there's this male thing that I got to prove I'm a man. They never say that, but, you know.
Well, it's even a little more deep. I watched this History Channel, and they had some generals on the other day that they wanted to use the battleships and, you know, all our major battleships in the war in the Pacific campaign. And they were ordered to turn around to protect some Americans on Guadalcanal or something. And the guy was just so upset that he missed his chance to use these battleships in a battle. And it was like, you know, it has nothing to do with winning a war, whether you get a chance to fight battleships. It's like you got to do what you got to do, you know?
Well, that's just the military mindset. I was in the military for many years before I wised up to what was going on and got the hell out of it. I was dumber than most. I served in the Air Force and the Navy, and would have gone into the Army and then maybe even finished up in the Marines. Who knows?
And they get all these young people. Everybody I was in, they were all 18 and 19. Nobody was old. We had an old guy in there who was 22 years old. And the guys leading you were 25.
I know. I were one of those young guys leading a bunch of other young guys.
It is way too young to make decisions. And the same what they're doing over there right now. They're looking to send people over there. Do you think they're going to go over or not?
Of course they will.
Okay, so we're looking at some serious trouble.
You better bet your boots on it.
Okay. That's all I got to talk about. Okay. We're listening.
Thanks for calling.
Peace.
520-333-4578. Yeah, we're looking at serious trouble. It's already serious trouble. We're bombing a little country into the Stone Age. For what? For what? Because you all got a little bleary-eyed watching people come across the border with babies in their arms? Get a life. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Bill. Richard in California. We had a discussion the other night about freedom, how the Constitution guarantees freedom, and yet we're curious as to what, in your opinion, the freedom is based on.
Constitution doesn't guarantee freedom. Constitution sets up the government and restricts the government so that the government cannot impinge upon our freedom.
I stand corrected. But what is our freedom based on, in your opinion? For instance, I just read in the Washington Times that the American Psychiatric Association recently said that that child sex is not harmful to the child, adult child sex, that is. And that, to me, did not seem to be within the proper bounds of freedom.
Now it depends on your definition of freedom. I don't believe that such things are right. I don't care whether it's freedom or not. I don't believe it's right because a child does not have the ability to make the right decisions where those kinds of things are concerned and might be permanently, psychologically, and maybe even physically damaged by engaging in that kind of activity at certain young ages.
I agree entirely, and yet people would use the lack of government to justify these type of things as well as...
What do you mean by lack of government?
Right, or the freedom of the country to justify these things.
Well,
what I guess I'm trying to get is where does the ultimate authority between right and wrong rest in our country?
Well, I don't know where it rests today. I know where it used to rest. It used to rest founded solidly upon the Ten Commandments and the principles and ideals that the Founding Fathers set forth in the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution for the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights, which was specifically created to protect the rights of the individual against the power of the state. Now, that's where they originally came from, but today everything's topsy-turvy, nothing means what it used to mean, and everybody is ignoring the law and sort of making their own law as they go along, and that's, in my estimation, is formula for total and complete disaster.
I agree, and I think that if and when the New World Order ever does manage to completely subvert our nation into a one-world government, the things that are being permitted and even encouraged today will be capital offenses like homosexuality and things like that. But, I think we go back to Nazi Germany. Didn't Hitler embrace homosexuals and then chase a couple of them down to South America to kill them later?
Hitler came right out of the secret lodges. Hitler was boosted to power by the Thule Society. Their symbol, the swastika, is the only one that you'll find in the encyclopedias and dictionaries of the secret societies today. The whole philosophy of Germany in the 1930s is exactly the New Age and New World Order philosophy that's being expounded today. It's no different whatsoever, and the New World Order is going to be more terrible than Hitler ever dreamed of being.
I think we've got pretty good evidence of that already. Incidents in Ruby Ridge and Waco and many others that were not even...
And remember, Hitler was a socialist. The New World Order is going to be a socialist totalitarian government.
And one thing we can bank on is socialists are liars and liars are socialists. Thank you very much. I guess we just go back to the founding and the principles of the country. As you realize, during Jefferson, when he was governor of Virginia, homosexuals were executed. That's correct, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't studied anything about homosexuals back there, but I certainly wouldn't want to execute somebody because they did something in their bedroom with a consenting adult that was none of my business. How would I even know what they were doing?
Well, that's precisely the reason why there weren't any homosexuals knowing at that time. No one's been talking about crying, but yet...
I'll bet you anything you want to bet, there were lots of homosexuals, just nobody knew who they were. You know, I don't want anybody looking in my bedroom. I don't want to look in anybody else's bedroom. And as long as any other person is not hurting me or my property or the person or property of any other human being, I don't give a damn what they do. It's up to them and God to decide whether they did right or wrong. The only time I want to get into it is when they hurt other people or other people's property, and that's the only time I belong in it. That's the only time you belong in it. It's none of your business. Judge not, lest ye be judged. And you're going to tell me you're a Christian, aren't you?
No,
aren't
I'm
you?
Not.
You're not?
But I'm going to mention to you that what about teaching in public schools?
Teaching what?
Recruiting in public schools. Homosexual teachers recruiting in public schools.
Recruiting what?
Recruiting homosexual children.
How do you recruit homosexual children in public school? What are you talking about? No, I don't think they should do that. If they're hired to be a teacher, they should teach the subject they're hired to teach and nothing else.
Well, that's what the whole gay rights movement is about, is recruiting.
Well, I don't think it's about recruiting. I think it's about gaining political power and power in society that they haven't had for a lot of years. They've been outcast, spit on, reviled, beaten just because somebody saw them walking down the street. I don't blame them for being pissed off. I'd be pissed off, too, if I'd been treated like them for so long.
I'm not so sure that that's a real healthy thing to have exposed to in public schools. Right now, they have gay and lesbian.
Wait a minute. What did I just say? Right. If a teacher is hired, they should teach the subject they're hired to teach and nothing else.
Right. I'm 50 years old, and I've never seen homosexuals beaten and reviled. Maybe you
come on. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. I'm 50 years old. I've never seen that.
Well, then you've been very lucky. I've not only seen it,
They were not very popular in the Marine Corps, I know, but I've never seen anything happen as you had described.
Well, I've seen it.
Well, thank you for your time.
And I've seen people pick on other people for absolutely no reason at all, not just homosexuals. Just because I've seen... I watched a guy get up one night and walk over and just hit somebody in the face as hard as he could just because he didn't like the way the guy looked. I don't like that at all. Now, if you're going to read Bible verses to me and stuff like that, listen to me. Jesus said, judge not, lest ye be judged. Do you understand what that means? If there's a problem between God and homosexuals, God will take care of it. Good evening. You're on the air. Yes.
Yes, I've been trying to get a hold of you for about 2 years.
Well, here you are.
Yes. I don't know if you read the White Mountain Independent in Sholo or not.
Sometimes I do.
Okay. Well, I put out an ad trying to locate you some time ago in January. I was I didn't know what it was.
Even if you located me, you wouldn't get up here. Not unless you want a bullet. Nobody comes up here that we don't know, unless it just happens to be a tourist or somebody comes up and takes pictures. A rabbit can't run across this hill without us knowing about it.
And
we don't know who you are. I don't know if you're a federal agent or it's some guy that works at McDonald's or what. I don't know who you are.
Well, I've been researching John F. Kennedy for about 11 years.
Yeah.
I was active in the Liberal Party in Canada for.
You need to talk louder. You need to talk louder.
Pardon me?
You need to talk louder.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay. I'm researching a screenplay that I plan to write or plan to work on over the next little while. It's about John F. Kennedy and the circumstances surrounding his death in Dallas and a lot of the unanswered questions. And I was turned on to your work about 2 years ago by a very good friend of mine. I've seen your videos, and I've also read your book. And when you put a lot of the pieces together from a lot of works, be it from the interviews of Bobby Kennedy and other thoughtful books on the assassination, your book ties everything together. And I just want to say how wonderful it is to have someone like you in the world that's willing to put their neck on the line to do work like that, first of all.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I've been in touch with a number of, or actually with one person in particular I'd like to use for the story about President Kennedy's murder. And he was very forthcoming in his conversation, very candid. That was about a year and a half ago. But the one thing he did, and he was a man who was, I guess you could say he was, very close to Kennedy. You know who he is if I spoke to you privately. And he forced me to think. You know, there's a lot of material out there. There's, you know, endless books and everything. And
Yeah, most of them designed to confuse the issue and lead you away from any relevant truth.
And the one thing he said to me, you know, I was asking him, you know, questions and giving him kind of my pet theories, and he said to me, he said, Eric, he said, why do you think the CIA didn't do it? And coming from a man that close to President Kennedy, it blew me away that this man would be so candid on the telephone with me. But he forced me to think, and we had a couple of good devil's advocate sessions over the telephone, and that forced me to really, really go into my research, and that's when I got a hold of your book a number of months later, and a great book by Kenny O'Donnell, which I don't know if you've read it, Johnny, We Hardly Knew You. It's a wonderful book.
No, I haven't read that one.
You've read it, eh?
No, I haven't, but guess what, we're out of time.
Okay, well, I would like to talk to you privately if I could. I can give you a number. Call me.
No, don't do that. No.
Okay.
You just call the number that you just called sometime during the afternoon.
Call this number sometimes in the afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I said. I got to let you go. We're out of time.
No problem, Mr. Cooper. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
That's it, folks. Good night. And God bless each and every single one of you. Please wake up. Please take off the blinders. Please quit following what other people tell you and what other people say. Question everything. Find the truth. Seek ye the truth, and the truth will make you free. Nothing else will do it. Not leaders, not churches, not nations, not anything. Only the truth will do it.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. It's the law passing. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, think of the facts.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. Dance with yourself and do what you're told.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike. Demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land. And Clinton saying take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar, right? Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rape the nation. Order. Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program agitation.
Don't resist! You're surrounded by the UN in white and gray, the ATF, the men in black, from the One World Order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilations. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip. National ID, debit card? Yeah. Vaccination biochip, milk carton kits, genetic engineering. Clinton says her health plans for you and your own good. Sure. And Adolf Hitler's Robin Hood. Order. Masonic mind manipulation. Inciting riots is crisis creation.
Order.
Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is a test for all of us. So I have today just one simple request. A comprehensive package of health care benefits that are always there and can never be taken away.
Atmospheric.
social illusion, media hype, planned confusion, Masonic religion. It's a liar. Not your praying for a Luciferian Messiah.
The Illuminati thinks that they're enlightened, that they're to be the gods of Earth, born of incest from the sons of Satan and their sisters in satanic birth. Hidden agenda, Kissinger, Nixon, Ford, and Bill, while your kids out back smoking crack for some cheap thrill. They've numbed us down and dumbed us down with fluoride TV drugs, the NEA, and public schools. They've taken your brightest and our best and made them public fools. With managed media, brain-bending lies and stealth, the banksters stole your wealth. Johnson, Bush, Carter, Reagan, Gore, and Dan, they've all been pushing pipes, Masonic master plan. Rhodes Scholar oration. Clinton speaks, then rapes the nation. Luciferian subjugation. New World Order Illuminati coronation.
Mass media grand domination.
Orders of the quest. Think they're superior. They think that they're the best.
And you're inferior, you little crap.
Skull and Bones, Scroll and Key, Knight Templar, Harvard University.
They're the Faustian fraternity.
Knights of the Golden Circle, Ancient Order of the Rosen Cross, CFR Albatross.
Insult Party, Rockefeller's Bob.
MK Ultra, ISA, from the OSS to the CIA.
Mass murder. It's a game they play.
Galileo, NASA, Jupiter, Plutonium 2000.
You will suck. They'll call it Lucifer. For fun.
Pyramid Giza. Hitler called it the Luciferian Millennium.
1,000 points of light.
Love of Rome, Thunderdome, I do call it Lucas Cut. If the UN lives, y'all go bust.
Wake up stupid and read the scoop. Mullen sudden driven and tune in to Coop.
Come on, paranoid, you say.
Bohemian Grove, Beverly Hall, Lord Betraya, they want it all.
Yeah, they want it all.
Kissinger, Gingrich, Army, Buckley, Dole, New World Order, authoritarian control.
Counterfeit.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager.